Oh, Mary, you blue-white flowering beast, you ride our hearts so we forgive the devils that trespass your forgiveness. Living off your light, they suckle grace and hyacinths. You let them. A wet apron hangs your neck white. All is milk, but not ocean. 1. The sun had already begun to descend in Coney Island as Maria, Rose, and Francesca raced down the steps of the boardwalk through the expanse of kitty litter sand and leapt, yelping, into the water. They hopped through the dun-colored froth, their lips and teeth pulsating from the cold, each playing at splashing each other, each trying not to get wet. It was a mid-September afternoon, and they had just finished all their schoolwork and chores, and had promised their mother for the 50th time that they would be back in order to help set the table for dinner. It was a long drive from Bensonhurst to Coney Island, but with Maria's new driver's license, she welcomed any chance to leave the neighborhood, especially if it meant getting to watch the sunset through the spokes of the Wonder Wheel. Francesca and Maria took turns swimming the length of the tide, but stayed close to shore, their mother's admonishing voice pinging in their heads. Rose, the middle sister, swam determinedly out, head just beneath the surface, skimming the foamy gray, mouth shut tight against the debris. Maria and Francesca saw Rose swim past them and yelled out tones of caution. When Rose made no motion to stop, they looked at each other and simultaneously rolled their eyes. "Show off," Maria turned and sang after her. Francesca, the baby at 11, leapt up from behind Maria to dunk her brown eyes live with laughter. Maria shrugged her off placatingly, chuckling with averted eyes. As the golden light waned and cast its toughness over the dull ocean, it became increasingly more difficult to resist the chill that swept the dust into their hair and eyes. Maria told Francesca that they should start heading back, and began scanning the distance for Rose, but couldn't see her. Knowing their sister was not stupid enough to swim all the way out into the middle of the Atlantic by herself, they pushed their way back onto the sand, past the gravel and green glass that bit their knees and calves. They dried themselves while scouring the horizon for Rose, but not a single swimmer could be spotted. Maria's gaze fell upon a row of enormous glistening black rocks at the end of the beach. She nudged Francesca nervously, and they both watched as swell after swell beat upon the jetty. Maria thought she saw a figure moving between them, grabbed their stuff and walked swiftly down the beach toward the jetty, Francesca following close behind. Plodding by them was a family leaving for the day, laden with their lawn chairs and cooler bags. Maria asked the mother if she had seen a 13-year-old girl with long brown hair, and she nodded, pointing towards the rocks. They both thanked her and ran, kicking up sand until they reached the water. They called to Rose, who was in up to her neck and seemed to be examining something that was stuck between the slick rocks. Rose turned and, seeing her sisters, grinned and waved them over. Maria yelled, "For Christ's sake, Rose, it'll be dark soon. We need to get going." But Rose wouldn't budge, mesmerized by something indiscernible to her sisters. "You have to come see this," she yelled. "We have to go. I promised Mommy we'd be there," roared Maria. At a loss, Maria saw that Rose would not budge, and with an irritated sigh, re-entered the cold water. Anger mounting in her throat, she strode furiously through the tumult of waves. "I am going to strangle you," Maria bellowed. Then she saw them. Three tall statues of the Virgin Mary, unstuck from the rocks by a final wave, had risen and were floating on the surface of the ocean. 3. "Mary's a goddamn mermaid, I knew it," hurled Rose over the roaring tide. The other two girls stared, eyes locked with the statue, the water now challenging their necks. Rose doggy paddled a few feet over to where the porcelain Mary had been carried by waves. "Come on, you guys, help," she said, straining to lift her. Maria and Francesca broke from their respective shocked stances and swam dazedly to Rose's aid. Together, they hoisted and maneuvered Mary through the gray foam, passing jellyfish carcasses and the aftermath of last month's beach party. They eased Mary onto the sand, shivering gritty smiles at each other. Rose faked like she was going to give the statue mouth to mouth, and Maria shooed her away. She raised herself up on her haunches, and began examining Mary for dents or nicks, running her wet, soiled hands across Mary's smooth arm. "Where shall we keep her?" Francesca asked, alight with possibility. "Keep her? What do you mean, keep her?" "She ain't ours to keep, Francesca," Rose explained. "But we can't just leave her here. Some stupid boys will come along and mess with her." "Why don't we just offer her up to Aphrodite and send her back when she..." "Under the boardwalk. If we can carry her to the other side of the beach, she'll be okay." Maria cut in, her gaze still locked with Mary's. She rubbed the statue's arm reassuringly, unaware of the mud cakes she was leaving. Rose narrowed her eyes at Maria, noted her glazed expression, and nodded solemnly toward Francesca. Again the sisters raised the Virgin to their shoulders and made their way through the gray sink of sand and gravel. They stumbled silently through the wind that had swept up with the onset of night, hunched over, oblivious to the dark. Sputtering held breath, they held on tightly to the statue as they swayed with the gust. There was a brief exhale on three. They each caught their breath, the new gust sweeping their insides. Looking up, they saw the faded neon of the Wonder Wheel's evening retirement just before they saw the boardwalk. They quickened their pace, reached the boardwalk, and with an air of jubilance, finagled Mary sideways through the narrow space between chain-link fence and sand. They climbed in after her, hair clinging to their dusty faces, eyes readjusting to the darkness. Once squeezed in, they sat down to rest. Quietly, Rose hushed, "You guys, how are we going to get her out of sight? This thing's barely tall enough for Francesca not to hit her head. It's still not safe." "We'll lay her down and push her. What else? Come on, don't forget, Mom's still waiting for us. As much as I'd like to avoid that scenario right now, we need to move," Maria chimed. The three girls positioned themselves at Mary's feet and pushed, their bodies jerking from the weight. With a final heave, they reached a more secluded spot. Rose and Francesca looked at Maria for want of something to say. "Well, now what?" Rose asked, watching as Maria stroked the smudges she had left on the statue. Anxious, Rose turned to Francesca, then back again to Maria as a small voice crackled from Maria's throat. "In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost." They each crossed themselves where they sat in a circle, their heads bowed, beaded, and quiet. Some time later, they had found Maria's car where she had parked it by the cyclone, and driven back on the Belt Parkway to their parents' home, where they were greeted with their mother's nervous shouting and smacks. They sat around the dinner table, their heads once again bowed in silence. 4. Mary woke into the glint of morning and watched the sun dart through the boardwalk slats and break into shards of gold. She smiled and tried to lift her heavy head from the sand where she lay supine. But the laborious effort was so great, she sank back down into the groove her sleep had worn. Just above her head, the boardwalk sagged slightly from the chug of feet stepping to the arcade, the carousel, and the beach. Her head thundered its morning electrical storm. She shut her eyes and lay there, her mind drifting to the circulating song of the carousel and the pinging of the winner's bell. In her dream, she had perambulated the graph of Bach's cantata, the Lobet Gott in Seinen Reichen, had known each crescendo in her body, had known each injection of lyric for what it was, allowing it to soften her plaster into malleable flesh. She had moved swiftly, clad only in high-heeled pumps, her smooth legs stealing across the score of graphite, a strand of pearls swinging around her neck. In her dream, she had waltzed the dead back to their graves from where they had found her by the jetty, had returned their hearts to their own grainy dullness while hers danced in rings of blue-white fire. She had sung the coaxing lies of nymphs to guide them, had been an Oread pilaster for their breaking. With shoulders staunch as marble, she had not been inflexible, swaying as each wave crashed her boundary, an accumulation of quarries and water. She had listened to their restless queries, had lulled them back to sleep with the lilting of Bach's cantata. She had been both Orpheus and Eurydice. She had been the Madonna. She had been their Electra. And when it was ended, She had jumped off the jetty and swum until her striving body was lifted by the current, and then she simply flowed with it. She raised her hands to her temples and massaged the skin there. From what stirred this incessant beating of drums? From what did the gong sound? From between her eyes, she beat back this throbbing telepathically as she rubbed her tense muscles. Her fingers knew it first, the chipping off of plaster as they dug deeper into the soothing. There was a chipping, and then a cracking, as particles of plaster broke up and crumbled between her fingers, raining into her eyes and the sand beneath her. Her mouth dropped open in terror and surprise as she clawed at the cavity and watched the chip pieces fall away. She felt two giant holes in the place where her forehead had been, and dug both thumbs deeper into the opening. She tried desperately to chip off more of her plaster. She yanked and pulled and grunted and flailed to and fro in the sarcophagus her rigid body had worn into the sand. She tore and tore, but no more would come off. With great fatigue, she retired her hands to her sides and chuckled sardonically at her own frustrated compulsion. 7 years of erosion, no wonder, she sighed in resignation. With a shallow intake of breath, she moved her hands up to the back of her neck, gently massaging to break up the congealed sacs of fluid there and in her shoulder blades, the pain rising to the back of her head, where they conspired in fired synapses. The whole of her head was seized by lightning. She pulsated like the reverb of plucked aluminum. She was cold and radiant, emitting little puffs of breath, which iced the warm air around her. She had become the sheen of a knife's blade. Immobile and gelatinous, she lay there, shining blue and white. She watched the ray she emitted converge with that of the sun. She reached down into the sand beside her, strained her neck to find remnants, any remnants of her cast to fill her orifice, to make her head whole again. All was sand around her. The grit, filling her teeth, stung her lips from speaking.